The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Let's get it on right here on Friday. It is 8:04. George Brockler on the George Show, 710 KNUS. I want to continue to have the conversation that we've been having about this Gallup poll and this pride in being an American. And maybe I'll do that with our next guest. I had a conversation with the super smart guy. You've heard of him here on the radio before. He wasn't available. So instead we got Michael Fields from, I'm kidding, it is Michael Fields from Advanced Colorado Institute. Michael, you are joining us to talk about something else, but I want to segue back to something we just wrapped up with. I know you listen to the show every single moment of the day and then re-listen to it on the podcast. Thank you. We have been talking about a Gallup poll that shows that, and it's only been around since 2001, but that's 21 years. That's a long time. Historic lows in those Americans, whether they're Republicans, Democrats, or unaffiliated, who describe themselves as extremely proud or even extremely and very proud to be Americans. And I've been exploring with people why that is and how do they describe themselves and why. Where do you put yourself in the category of extreme, very, moderate, somewhat, and not at all?
Yeah, so I'd probably go with the very category. And I think your last caller who was talking about, you know, the fact that policies do matter. And, you know, I'm not going to become, you know, not proud of our country based on who's elected president. But through your example of Afghanistan, I mean, I think that was definitely something that would lessen the pride in what America stands for. You know, botching the withdrawal and looking at the fact that we're leaving allies out there, that kind of thing. There are definitely decisions that are made by leaders in our country that would make me less prideful. But I would still say it's very high, given the fact that we can self-correct, that we can make better decisions, we can pick better leaders. I think we've stood up for freedom and democracy better than any country. We have the best system. But I think that self-correction part is a big deal. And I'm very proud of our country. I'm proud of our state, even if we're heading, you know, more in the wrong direction here.
Before we get to that wrong direction piece and some of the stuff that's going on, have you ever felt extremely proud? What's the difference between the way you feel now and that, and what could get you back there?
Yeah, I mean, I think some of it's situational based. I mean, I was, you know, in high school when 9/11 happened, and then our response, and part of that was George W. Bush's response, you know, standing on the ruins of Twin Towers, et cetera. I mean, I think there are moments of extreme pride in our country. Looking back, I wasn't around, but, you know, when you get rid of slavery or you make big steps on civil rights, et cetera, I think those are moments when you can feel that. And there's moments that bring it down a little bit. And so, you know, I think overall, I wouldn't want to live anywhere else. love our country. I think, you know, the people that rip on it, you know, and you see it a lot in the education system, I don't think that does any good. But I think it's important to be realistic about our positives and negatives, too.
Well, you brought us there because you used the word education system. You were a practicing, I guess, educator. I don't know if you still describe yourself that way, but tell folks your background in education.
Yeah, so I taught both fourth and sixth grade at a charter school in Aurora, and then was on the board of that school for another 7-8 years and coached basketball, middle school basketball. So been around education. Almost everybody in my family is in education in some way. And now I, you know, I'm an adjunct professor at CCU teaching political science. So kind of all the way down from, you know, elementary school to college at this point.
And you're also a CU buff, which means you're a genius.
Yeah.
But there's that gap that I had mentioned.
They let you in, so I can't say all of it.
Listen, they had to have a token moron, and I fit that. They had to check that box. In fact, part of my existence is to give hope to others. Like, they bring me into the engineering department. They're like, see if this guy can do it. So there's a huge age gap that I read from this Gallup poll. For 55 and older, that's not you. That's not me yet. 51% describe themselves as extremely proud. You get to our age group. Wait a minute. How old are you, Michael?
35.
Okay, you're in. Woo! You just made it.
35 to 52?
Yeah, it's 54, but shut it. Okay. You know, it's there. So 35 to 54, 35%, so a little more than one in three. You get to that next demographic, that 18 to 34-year group, yeah. And it drops down to 25%. And if you look at the not a college graduate, 41%, college graduate, 33%, is education the difference between those numbers?
I think it could be. I mean, I think you think about the fact that a lot of these younger people are growing up in, you know, the media and in education that talk a lot about, you know, how bad the police are and how bad the system is and how rich people, you know, are the only people that get anything in this country. And I think there's a lot of information out there, whether it's social media, whether it's the media, whether it's education. I think it all combines to have a more negative view of America. And it's something, you know, when I'm teaching my college class, I definitely see it with those students, and it's to a certain degree. But I think, you know, the point is pointing out all the positives. I mean, our system is truly amazing with checks and balances, with, you know, the federal system we have that allows states and localities. Like, there's so many positive things about the system we've created, and there's so many good people. And I think people should think about, you know, all the people in their lives that they think are amazing. And you know, the fact that those are the Americans who are helping other people, who step up when there's a disaster or something happens to others. So I think, you know, I think a lot of it has to do with the media. A lot of it has to do with our education system. But again, I don't think this is something that can't be fixed, that we can't develop more pride in our country.
You brought up checks, and we'll talk about that in a moment. I just want to share with you, there was a potential credibility killing revelation on your part here. Someone just texted in, he was in all caps high school during 9/11, multiple question marks. I agree. That is shameful. I don't know how you can change that, but it probably makes it harder for you to relate to other Americans. Let's get right to it, though. When you talked about checks and balances, you weren't talking about these checks, but there's something that the governor has been, it feels like a parade of sorts, like every day he's walking by any camera and saying, I'm giving money back to Coloradans. What's going on?
Yeah, so we're going to get our Tabor refunds in the mail pretty soon. So it'll be $750 per individual, $1,500 per couple. And basically, you know, he is talking about how he's saving us money, how he's sending it back. He renamed our Tabor refunds the Colorado Cashback and tries to act like it's some kind of gift from him. And with our checks, he's putting out this letter. And in this letter, you know, his name is on it three times. It's his big heading.
Do you have the letter? Do you have a copy of the letter?
I do in front of me. Yeah. And it says, on behalf of the state of Colorado, it's a true pleasure to send you this enclosed Colorado Cashback refund check. No mention of Tabor. another part of it, it talks about, because of Colorado's strong economic growth and our successful work to close special interest loopholes, we are able to put even more hard-earned money back in your pocket, and we're doing it ahead of schedule. So he's writing this whole letter about all the great things he's done to get us this money back when we know he tried to get rid of
He tried to kill it with Prop CC. You were out in front on that, beating that thing to death, and voters agreed. He was a big proponent of never giving back any money to Coloradans.
Yeah, well, you were too. You think about it. You and Heidi Ginnall, who's running for governor, were co-chairs of the No on CC campaign. And so, you know, we were out there debating the Speaker of the House. He was, you know, Polis was doing press conferences for this, writing op-eds in the Denver Post, saying he wanted to take our refunds away totally. And now a couple years later, he is talking, this is the greatest thing ever, and people really need this. It's really a lot of hypocrisy that's going on. And, you know, he's somebody who kind of, you brought up a parade. He's kind of the person who sees which way the parade's going, runs in front, and tries to act like he's leading. And that's what's happening on Tabor refunds right now.
Yeah, it's interesting, too, that it's not quite the if you can't beat them, join them. Because if it was join them,
no,
he would change his tune on Tabor. But my sense is, I'm interested in your opinion, once November comes and goes, if he secures re-election, Tabor's going to be right back on the chopping block.
Yeah, I mean, it is in the Democratic, you know, their whole platform. So they put out a platform for Democratic priorities, and number one in the economic issue is to repeal Tabor.
Oh, my God.
And Jared Polis likes to be in charge of all of the money and show where it goes, et cetera. And so I think you're absolutely right. This is Democrats getting on board for a few months to try to get reelected. They're going to go right back to going after Tabor, trying to take that money away. I think the important thing, you know, we're getting $3 billion back this year. you know, if we don't go out and fight hard for Prop CC and voters don't side with us on that, this money, you know, wouldn't be there and it wouldn't be there in the future. And so I think one, it shows how big of a victory Prop CC was back in 2019. But you're right. Democrats are going to go straight after the money again. They even have a couple ballot issues they're trying to get on right now to take away some of those Tabor refunds and spend them on other stuff.
So you are kidding me.
People shouldn't get fooled. No, there's one on education. I don't know if that one's going to make the ballot, but the other one's affordable housing, $300 million for a government-run affordable housing plan that would take straight out of our refunds, while the other Democrats are saying, we need this money. It's so important. It's such a big deal.
This title that he has given this thing, or the wordsmithers mm-hmm. under the Gold Dome, this Colorado cashback or
yep.
whatever it's called, has he been asked about that? Like, why can't you slip in the word Tabor in anything you say?
Yeah, he got asked about it, and his literal response was, well, no, the press is calling it the Colorado cashback. As he's standing in front of a sign that says Colorado cashback, and in the letter it says Colorado cashback. Like, this is how bold he is. Just, you know, the hypocrisy. They're all just standing there shocked. Like, we're doing this? No, I'm pretty sure it's in the letter, and it is in front, you know, you're in front of a sign that says that, and the website is Colorado cashback. So he was totally avoiding. I actually will give credit to the media on going and trying to hold him accountable on this. The problem is this guy will have $20 million behind ads that are saying he gave this money to you, you know, $750 Colorado cashback, thanks to Jared Polis. It's hard to combat that when he has so many resources for his reelection campaign.
We're talking with Michael Fields, president of Advanced Colorado Institute. That's not the only thing. And by the way, you're right on the media thing. I was impressed with Channel 9's and the big talking heads on Channel 9, their willingness to really call this out. They did not, like they do with most issues on the left, they kind of beat around the bush and go hardcore after the Republicans. This one, they gave Polis Republican treatment.
Yeah. Like Kyle Clark did it, Marshall over there, Sean Boyd with CBS4. I mean, all of the media has been going and trying to hold him accountable. And in that press conference, they went after him. Colorado Public Radio did an interview with him and really pushed him on this. I think he looks at it, though, hey, this is great because more people are talking about it, right? And everybody's going to get the check, and they're all going to get his letter anyway. And so that's where it's our job, you know, to go out and educate people about what this means. Tabor's already popular. I think it's going to be even more popular after this, even if the governor's not using those words. But, you know, Tabor's more popular than any politician by a ton, including Jared Polis. And so, you know, it's something we've had for a long time. And in one way, they're trying to use Tabor to get reelected. On the other side, you know, Tabor is getting more popular, and I think it's super important.
Now, the reason we get these giant refunds is because government's coffers have kind mm-hmm. of expanded way past the growth in inflation and population. Is that the measure?
Yeah, so inflation plus population is where, you know, the growth that can happen. And so if it's beyond that, we get these Tabor refunds. So my government has more money than ever. It's the biggest budget, $38.1 billion, going up $2 billion a year right now. And then on top of that, we have this $3 billion that's being sent to taxpayers. But one other thing is they're keeping more of our money because of fees. And, you know, the delivery fee just started, the ride-sharing fee just started. The gas fee after the election,
it's a great point, because they are cheating us out of the benefits of Tabor by redefining what a tax yeah. is. And by the way, our Colorado Supreme Court has assisted them with that at every turn. So these refund checks really could be much bigger. I mean, if we had approved the things that they're claiming as fees, and you're right about the gas one is the most outrageous, and yet most people, my guess is, are going to vote, ignorant of that fact, and that is Jared Polis signs into law, and with his signature still wet, I think, on the actual law, then announces, oh, my sweet Lord, gas is out of control. Let's suspend yeah. the gas tax, not forever, just until I'm reelected.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. And so you think about this, over 10 years, it's $5.2 billion that this bill is. And so, yes, that is money that does not count under the Tabor cap, that we will be charged more. And he's still talking about saving people money. I'm like, how does the budget go up $2 billion every year, but you're saving people money? Like, that money has to come from our pockets in some way. And so, you know, this is slick marketing, and he has the money to put behind it. But yes, he raised, without our approval, and we're suing over it right now, But, you know, this gas fee, ride sharing, deliveries, more people are getting deliveries now than ever, 27 cents on every delivery. So, yeah, they're getting more money while trying to act like, you know, they're saving us, you know, some dollars, which just isn't true.
In the DC universe, there's a hero named Green Lantern, and he has superpowers through his green ring. His opponent, if you will, his nemesis, is Sinestro, who's got the yellow power. Your Sinestro is a guy from the Bell Policy Institute, and it's a much smaller Sinestro than the Green Lantern, but Scott Wasserman, and you guys have the most brilliant, and by brilliant, I mean you dominate him, exchanges on Twitter. This is a guy that refuses to concede that government at the state level has exploded in growth. What is his argument to justify that?
Well, I think part of it is just, you know, what money he thinks we owe the education system. He thinks, you know, the fact that long term we need to or have made all these commitments. And so we have this structural deficit. We're just not spending enough. I mean, the thing with Scott is just he is truly kind of like a Bernie Sanders, big government. Government needs to take care of everything. And so he gets frustrated with Governor Polis for, you know, even giving these refunds back, you know, supporting very small income tax cuts, et cetera. You know, I actually have respect for Scott because I think it's a consistent view.
Oh,
he doesn't change his opinion, right?
Like, if it's true.
Like, you know, inflation is 9.1. People are struggling. Let's still not give them their money back, right?
Right.
Like, this is,
and let's raise taxes.
You know, yeah, right. Yeah, 100% wants to raise taxes. And so I like, you know, our back and forth with Scott because we just have such different views on it. And I think it's good for people to hear both sides of it. You know, I think that as government grows so big that people have less opportunity, you know, central planning doesn't work, et cetera. I want government to be smaller and efficient and do the things well that it should be doing. But again, government's growing, you know, $1.5, $2 billion every year. You know, I think that's enough when people are struggling.
One other thing about this that people may have lost sight of is this is not the way Tabor was meant to work. In fact, Tabor has built into it this idea that if you pay more taxes, you should get more of the refund. And it's sort of staggered in that way. There are six classes, but the left-leaning legislature came in and made a change. And it's not one that's necessarily bad for the times, but describe what took place.
Yeah, so basically there was a six-tier refund mechanism, right? So if you're in different tiers all the way up income level, you would get a different amount. And in this part of Tabor is a sales tax refund. And so, you know, people that obviously are spending more in our economy, higher income people would get more of a refund back. They made it a flat $750 for everybody. I think, you know, as you said, you can argue about the fairness of that. It's not specifically in Tabor that it has to be a certain way. And so it's really up to the legislature how to do it. I have not decided to fight that, given the fact that I'm like, look, the real argument is money going back to taxpayers or is government spending it, right? We can argue about the details of it. Overall, you know, the fact that $3 billion is going back, that's where I want to be fighting. That's the side I want to be on. We can talk about the refund mechanism, and that's only for 1 year that it's this way, right? So it's going to go right back to the six-tier one unless some changes happen in the future. So I think that argument can happen. The bigger argument is the CC, you know, Prop CC argument. Do they take it all and spend it, or do we get it back as taxpayers?
And it was fun to watch Sinestro twist and contort as he was like, well, if we have to have Tabor, then I guess this is the way to redistribute wealth, so I'm on board.
Yeah, and my argument to them was like, look, if all we have to do is make sure it's equal to, you know, the 750 to everybody, and that'll get you to support Tabor, like, let's do it, right? And they're like, oh, no, you know, they're backing off of that. But that's where the argument, like, if this little change, you know, a few hundred dollars here and there, if that's the change we need to do to get every single person on board on Tabor, then let's do it. If not, let's have a discussion about, you know, a fair way to refund this money.
Right before we let you go, Michael Fields, president of Advanced Colorado Institute, you and I do a podcast, a weekly podcast called The Run-Up, The Roundup.
The Advanced Colorado Rundown.
And that's an inside joke because I never get it right. Tell us about the last two that we just put in the can that are going to fire.
Yeah, so one of them was Stephen Byers from Colorado Common Sense Institute talking about housing, the cost of housing. And it's really interesting just given the fact that the reason housing prices are so high is because we don't have enough, you know, units, we don't have enough homes built. And so we talked to him about that. The other one is, what was it?
We did Dan Haley with the, did we do Dan Haley with energy yet?
No.
No, we're doing Dan
yet.
Haley with energy yet. It was, I was going to say, as to Stephen Byers, by the way, tons of information.
Oh, we did Pam Anderson.
We did Pam Anderson. We'll talk about that in a moment. For those of you that think, oh my God, Stephen Byers, an economist, and we're going to talk about housing, that has all the markings of something that is incredibly dry. You will not be disappointed in this podcast. I'm kidding. We get a lot of good information out of him in a pretty short period of time. And it was eye-opening. And then you're right. We had Pam Anderson on to talk about the election system. Man, she could get, that was an easy podcast to do. Cause as you and I said, it was pretty much like, please introduce yourself. And then it was like, well, thank you for coming.
I think you walked off and were eating food or something and she was going, but, she was really informative. And I think part of it is knowing what our election system, how it actually works, right? We jump in, have a lot of opinions about it. She's an expert, 20 years in the field. I thought it was really interesting to hear her views on all that.
Michael Fields, president of Advanced Colorado Institute and co-host of the Advanced Colorado
Rundown.
Thank you for that, which is available on every one of your streaming platforms for podcasts. Go out there and listen to it. Thanks for joining, man. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on, George. See ya.
Talk to you soon. Hey, listen, right before we cut away here, and we are a little bit overdue for a break, I want to remind you of two super opportunities that 710 is proud to sponsor. One is this second annual cigar night with Dennis Prager. Things gonna sell out. Be part of that group. It's September 1st at the View House in Centennial, right off of I-25. Seating's gonna be limited. Great stuff. Your ticket, which you can get at 710canus.com, includes a whole bunch of things, including hors d'oeuvres, a carving station, first beverage, a face tattoo of your choice. I'm kidding. There's no face tattoo. One of Dennis's books and premium cigars. And the other thing is, and this is also pretty cool here, is we've got Larry Elder, who had this big kind of hit show movie, Uncle Tom. He's got Uncle Tom, the sequel, Uncle Tom 2. That's going to be debuted and screened right here in Denver by us, 710 KNUS. You get a chance to be part of that. And this is free, F-R-E-E free. That free audience there, 6 p.m. at the Regal South Glen 14 Theaters on Monday, August the 22nd. You can check out the details. There's a VIP meet and greet followed by the screening. And then after that, questions and answer session. Check it out at 710KNUS because you got to register. And when those tickets are gone, there will be no others. When we come back, we're going to continue to have conversations with you. Bunch of texts pouring in, by the way. We'll get to those as well. George Brockler on The George Show, 710KNUS. George Brockler, right back with you here on 710 KNUS. My thanks to Michael Fields, president of Advanced Colorado Institute. We even asked him some of the questions that have been dominating the conversation for the earlier parts of the show, and they were about pride in being an American, and a Gallup poll that has shown, at least for the 21 years that they've been conducting the poll, Americans across the board, by age, by education, R's, D's, U's, that's Republicans, Democrats, and unaffiliateds, are at the lowest level they've been in 21 years. And so it got us having me to ask this question. And really, the conversation's been fueled by the texters and the phone calls. One, why is that? Why is it so low? And for you, are you extremely proud? Are you very proud? And what is it? What's that gap? What would it take? Is it who's in office? Is it whatever values you think that the country embodies? Is it what we do abroad or at home? What are those things? And here's some text coming. By the way, the educational system is, seems like part of this conversation because of the disparity in numbers based on age, based on who has a college degree. Billy and I have been talking about it off air. Here's one. George, a whole generation of American children have been taught the Howard Zinn version of American history, so they hate the country. That was done so when the time comes, they will willingly hand our country over to a UN communist world government. That's a little strong. I do think the way we teach history makes a difference, but I don't think the goal here is we just go, oh, the UN's here. Everybody throw a hug into them. I was very patriotic until the BLM riots. That showed me that we have a large portion of our society that can't think for themselves and only thinks to what big corporate media tells them to think. We're going to go to the phone lines. We do have a line open at 303-696-1971. Let's get to Jennifer. Jennifer, you're on 710 KNUS. What do you think?
Hey, dude. I think that when unity is high, pride is high. I think when division is high, pride is low. And, you know, this sampling is only 20 years. I don't know that you would call it necessarily historic. It's a 20-year span. And it started with, you know, 9/11, when unity was high, of course, pride was high. Now we've gotten into cultural issues that are dividing us. And, you know, some of it's partisan, but I think overall, when division is high, we're going to feel less confident about our country. We're going to feel less pride overall.
I want to ask you about you, but is that source of unity that you describe only at times of extreme crisis? Like we've heard a caller reference, you know, December the 7th. We've heard about 9/11. I agree with you on that. Is that it? Is that the only time that we're going to feel greater numbers of pride is after some disaster that pulls us all together?
I think it's how that crisis is handled or how various issues are handled. You know, the point about who's in office does matter. If you think back to the 70s, I mean, we had hostages being held in Iran. Gas prices were high. It almost mimics what's going on right now. Then we had Ronald Reagan, and Reagan wasn't perfect. But Ronald Reagan steps forward, and he inspires, and he uplifts, he corrects policy. And, you know, he had some issues towards the end of his administration. But the one thing I'd like to see in a candidate is, what solutions do you have to the problems we have right now? Quit, you know, we keep hammering on each side of the aisle, back and forth and back and forth. What about uplifting Americans? What about inspiring pride? I think that's part of the issue.
Do you then, for you, and I want to ask about you, do you describe yourself, well, where do you put yourself on that spectrum? Extreme, very, moderate, not at all?
I am very proud of my country. I'm not extreme because I think that does fluctuate with conditions. I think it's fluctuated with who's been in office. When Obama was in office,
yeah,
and he drew a line in the sand with Syria, was not as proud of my country.
It wasn't the line, you know, that he drew. It was not doing anything once they ran right over it.
Exactly. It made us look like chickens. I will spare Billy beeping, you know, my bad words.
Yep.
But, you know, but the same thing with Trump. And I know this is going to tick off some listeners. But when he talked about women the way he did, I was not proud of my country at the time, because we often refer to the president as the leader of the free world. Now, I supported all of Trump's policies, thought he was a great leader, but at that moment, not as proud.
So who's in office matters. Yeah, I get that. Although I don't want to say, hey, I felt less pride being an American because Obama was our president, as somehow the individual or the character in the White House dictates my pride for my country, because my pride isn't driven by an individual. But I will say, what that individual does in office, and I think that's what you're getting to, Jennifer, is how they act in office and the conduct that they do on behalf of the United States does have an impact to some extent on pride. And when President Obama went on that worldwide apology tour right after he got elected,
yeah,
and apologized for all of the horrible things we've done over all the years, I was like, come on, man. Come on, dude. That's not something Reagan would have ever done.
No. And like I said, Reagan put forward that, he didn't even attack his opponents personally. He attacked, you know, their policies, certainly. We've got a president now that really kind of gets, you know, down in the mouth when he's attacking his opponents. And half the time he can't even utter what it is he's truly thinking, if he is thinking that. So that causes me concern. I think it portrays weakness in our country. So therefore, my pride suffers a little.
Well, then what is it? What is it you're proud of? I mean, when you say I am very proud to be an American, what is it that makes you proud?
Well, I think Michael Fields hit on it. You know, we can self-correct. I'm proud that we have a system in our country. We are not a dictatorship. We can ebb and flow with, you know, we've made some bad decisions. It's impacting our economy. People are realizing our economy really needs to be shored up. We can get back on track. And I think that's the thing about America that's so wonderful, is we can get back on track. And I think overall, there is a baseline unity to our country. If we were attacked again, we would certainly, I think, rally together against outside opponent. I would hope so.
See, now you're at a hope thing, and this is causing me concern. Yeah. We actually talked about this when I was on active duty the last couple of weeks, and that is, what would the response be by the population to a 9/11 today? Is it different than it would have been 21 years ago? And whether it's because of the education system, because of the media, because of all of the division that has grown up politically and the social justice stuff, would we rally together? I worry about that.
Well, I think that you've hit on a number of conditions that are worrisome, but I also say it comes down to leadership. Who is leading in the situation and where do they lead us? Because when a crisis happens, you always look to who is leading, you know, to handle that crisis at hand. Like Michael brought up about George Bush getting on top of the heap and with the bullhorn, that was a moment of pride.
Pretty soon the people that knocked down these buildings are going to hear from all of us. Yeah, that's a great line.
Exactly, exactly. Instead of making excuses, you know, in other situations where, like with Afghanistan, that was tragic. And thank you for bringing that up as an example. That was so mishandled. No leadership there. Just an embarrassment for our country.
As we're talking about this too, Jennifer, I think about even the war in Ukraine, between Ukraine and Russia. In part, I take pride in our role that we play over there and at least providing them with the weapon systems and the know-how to defend themselves and their own liberty from Russia. I take pride that we have the ability to do that. On the other hand, I look at our response was so slow and anemic, and I think, God, aren't we better than this? And I just wonder, is that how it goes? I mean, just whatever we're doing abroad, whether we flex here, flex there, whether we're doing something, I don't know. I don't know how to interpret
it. I don't think it's just international. I think it's what's going on in this country and the division that we're experiencing. The fact that we can't talk about issues and come to resolutions. We have to call each other names and we have to fight. And, you know, one side feels like they're losing all their rights. The other side feels like they've never had any rights. And, you know, you were talking earlier this week about, sorry, I'm a big fan. I listen.
Oh, thank you for listening. I love it. Keep going.
Your military experience, your 2 weeks and how you went to Gettysburg. And you think about that as being, you know, one of the real scars on our country's history, and about how neighbors were fighting neighbors and how much blood was shed. We don't ever want to get to that point again.
No, but you're highlighting that maybe that's a place where we were far more divided than now. And there's this great line read by David McCullough at the end of the introduction of the first episode of Ken Burns' Civil War, which if you haven't watched it or you haven't watched it in a while, you should. But he says, between 1861 and 1865, Americans made war on each other and killed each other in great numbers, if only to become the kind of country that could no longer conceive how that was possible. And I think that's where we were. And all the other divisions that we've had up until this point, even during the 60s, have been even sometimes violent. But I do worry about the fact that underlining all of that or undergirding all of that was always a love of country, even if you were frustrated. And now it looks like, at least with this next generation, this 18 to 35 year old group, that's not there as much. I mean, and I worry about that.
You brought up education, especially in higher education. I think at some point it will self-correct as well. I mean, you look at, I was talking to the president of CCU. They've been blowing out their enrollment, you know, year after year after year. I mean, their enrollment is growing. I think there will be a self-correction because people will come to that point where they realize that maybe not everything they're learning or paying for as they're learning is really correct. I don't know.
Someone just texted in here. This was taken in March. A majority of Democrats would abandon their country in the face of Russian aggression, according to a Quinnipiac poll published on Monday. By contrast, most Republicans and independents, a majority of American adults would stand their ground and fight for freedom. I think that's telling, too. It's a little bit different. If this poll were taken in March, though, it precedes the decision in Dobbs, and that's the decision that overturned Roe and Casey. And I think that's important because in the gender breakdown on this, it was 43% of men describe themselves as very patriotic and only 34% of women. And I wonder how that Dobbs decision would impact some women's pride in their country.
Well, I think
and Jennifer, you sound like a woman. I don't want to prejudge you. I don't know what you're selecting later today, but for right now, you sound like a woman.
You know what? If anybody has to question that I'm a woman, I have a problem. That's probably going to get
there's a Supreme Court justice out there that isn't sure, but
I think we have more division in our country because of that decision, and we shouldn't, because it should be up to the states. You know, that, people think that Roe v. Wade, you know, has ended abortion. It hasn't. It's just put the decision on the states. And I think we need more clarity around that. But.
Jennifer, thank you so much for the call. And I appreciate the conversation, too. And also the super nice words. Keep those coming. Jennifer's line is open at 303-696-1971. We're going to cut away for a break. But, you know, when we've talked about the economy, we've talked about the Tabor give back here that's been redefined by Jared Polis as the Jared Polis money give back to Colorado. What are you going to do with that money? I've got an idea for you. How about prettify the house that you're in right now? Beautify it. And you can go to our friends at Urban Lights to do just that. They have the most outstanding selection of outdoor, indoor lighting, ceiling fans, all of the things that make your house feel not just more like a home, but more like an awesome home. Go out to their 20,000 square foot showroom. In fact, it's such an awesome showroom. It won Showroom of the Year, the National Lighting Showroom of the Year. In fact, I wonder if the award for that lights up. We'll have to check when I go out there. It has the best selection of all of these things. I've said this before. I love driving by a house, and when I see those lights like light up the tree or up the – I mean, it almost doesn't matter. The house could be covered in graffiti and broken windows. If you see the – you're like, that's a classy place. That is an awesome place. The lighting along the walkway that gets you up there, lighting inside the house – this is the place to go for all of those needs. Take that refund check, put it in your pocket, head over to Urban Lights. And you can visit them at urbanlightsdenver.com, urbanlightsdenver.com. I suggest going out to their showroom, which is easily gotten to just south of I-25 on Santa Fe between Florida and Mississippi, 7 days a week. South of I-25 on Santa Fe between Florida and Mississippi, 7 days a week. Go online, go on site, but check them out. When we come back, more of you, me, text, calls, 303-696-1971. George Brockler on The George Show, 710 KNUS. This is the theme from late night. It's actually early morning here on Friday. George Brockler on The George Show, 710 KNUS. Some of the texts here coming in after Tabor refund, I'm donating $100 each to Anderson, Ganahl, and O'Day. Boy, I like that. That's a good use of funds. And I encourage you to do stuff like that, but let's be clear, too. With this economy, with inflation going through the roof, the unaffordability of housing, the incredible spike in costs of food, of gasoline, it wouldn't shock me at all if folks clung to their money. 303-696-1971 is the number. I love getting back to the phone lines. Oh, we just had George on set. Oh, you know what? Billy may have hijacked that call. I may have just had to. There was a George on the phone line. I figured just based off of that name, had to be somebody not only brilliant, but perhaps strikingly good looking. Billy, is George still on the line here? Let's go to him right now. George, you're on 710 KNUS.
Wow, thank you for taking my call. But before I tell you what I think about what I call about, that Jennifer was one incredible call. She really needs to be a guest host on your show.
Oh, I like that. I think she would right now she's probably clapping in her car or whatever bar she's at and saying, yeah, turn that up. That's good stuff.
So the reason I'm calling is, you know, I'm 77 years old. When I was growing up, everybody wanted to serve their country. And Vietnam separated us a lot, but I have to tell you that I went to Vietnam twice. And
thank you.
My friends who, high school friends, who became draft dodgers are not my friends anymore. And it's so disappointing that since George H.W. Bush, we have not had a president who served on active duty. I know George W. Bush served
Texas Air Guard.
He was on active duty for a year while he was in pilot training. But it's so disappointing that we don't see that that desire to serve in the military among our leaders, the people who are leaders. I think that personally, I think that you should be required to be have a military background to be eligible to be president. You're going to be commander in chief And, you know, just like if you're not Catholic, you can't be Pope. You shouldn't be able to be the commander in chief if you don't have a military background.
Well, there's good arguments for that. There's a little bit of difference, though, and that is we have gone out of our way to create a governmental system that says to be the commander in chief, you may not be part of the military, and we want it to be in firm civilian control. So I get why we would have gone down the road that we went to, but know this, just foreshadowing, Ron DeSantis, Navy veteran. And also, for those of you following at home, pretty sure JAG guy. So boom, right there.
Yes, absolutely. But and Tom Cotton would be a good candidate. But it's so disappointing. And I'm including, I'm including Trump as a draft dodger also. I know that Trump and Biden were both draft dodgers, and that is.
Does that keep you from wanting to support them, George?
Yes, it does.
Oh, I'm losing you, George.
I'm a firm Trump supporter. I'm a Trump supporter because of what he did. He was such a great president. I hate his personality, but he accomplished a lot for our country. But if there was a veteran who was a Democrat against Trump, I would vote for the veteran.
Really? Really, that's interesting. What if that veteran was Jimmy Carter?
I'd vote for Jimmy Carter.
Yeah, because he's a veteran.
He was a really crappy president. Right. He was an Annapolis grad and a submarine there. But, especially now when only 1% of Americans serve on active duty.
And we're struggling to recruit right now. George, let me ask you this. Would you describe yourself as extremely proud, very proud, moderately proud, or little or not at all proud?
I'm extremely proud, and I'm extremely concerned.
Well, the concerned part I get. Do you have an explanation? And I'm about to have here in the studio someone from this age group, but can you explain why that 18 to 34-year-old age demographic is so low in their pride for America?
I think it started with Obama. I think, when Michelle Obama came up with this, I've never been proud of my country until now. That planted a seed that I think has germinated in the past 15 years.
That was such a bizarre comment. It was like, now that we've won, I am proud of America, but had they voted for someone not my husband, I wouldn't have been. And that gets me to this whole thing. Like, what are you proud of, George? Is it an individual? Is it a value? And I only have a couple seconds, but I wanted to give them to you.
Well, thank you. I'm proud of the foundation of our country and the documents that the Constitution and everything that we live for in our country, because the people who are running it right now, regardless of party, are not nearly as important as the founding documents and what the country's founders went through to create the greatest country in the history of the world.
From one George to another, from one veteran to another, thank you so much, George, for calling in. Listen, when we come back, we're going to continue this topic and talk about a couple other things with someone in that 18 to 34-year-old age group. George Brockler on The George Show, 710 KNUS.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.